everyone. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber, delivering you a bonus episode of Comic Book Central this week. That's right, you're on the bonus plan this week. Now, my regularly scheduled episode will premiere this Saturday as usual. That's going to be when I kick off my multi-part epic adventure at Terrificon. That is just days away. But there is a very special event coming up this weekend. It's taking place not too far from me. I not only wanted to tell you about it, but I wanted to give you a behind-the-scenes preview as well. As many of you know, I broadcast Comic Book Central from the Lair right here in Columbus, Ohio. Right here in the Buckeye State, two of my favorite characters are going to be coming to life in a magnificent musical way. The Cleveland Orchestra, conducted by Brett Mitchell, will be performing Raiders of the Lost Ark in concert this weekend, September 3rd and 4th. That's going to be at the Blossom Music Center in Cuyahoga Falls. It's right outside of Cleveland. It's the summer home for the Cleveland Orchestra. Also, coming up in October, Superman at the Symphony. That's going to be in Cleveland at Severance Hall. So two incredible adventures. We're going to find out more about them today on this bonus episode of Comic Book Central. This is going to be fun. If you are in or near Ohio this weekend for Raiders or October 30th for Superman, you are going to want to check these events out. Now, first up, I'm going to be chatting with Ilya Gadalovich, Artistic Administrator for the Cleveland Orchestra. Following that conversation up with the conductor, who's going to be bringing us Indiana Jones and Superman, Brett Mitchell. Then I'm going to be back to wrap things up and preview the next few episodes of Comic Book Central. So a lot to get to today. Folks, Indy's about ready to crack the bullwhip. Superman is getting ready to take flight. Let's go behind the scenes. Now, joining me on the show today is the Artistic Administrator for the Cleveland Orchestra, Ilya Gadalovich. Ilya, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
Exciting events that we're talking about today. A couple of them that, well, certainly appeal to me, certainly appeal to all the listeners out there. Let's start with Raiders of the Lost Ark in concert. Now, this is something, as an indie fan, as somebody who's on the indie cast, something I've been looking forward to for quite some time. Now, this is an event that's kind of been going on, internationally, correct?
Sure, and it's part of a kind of a greater movement in the industry to provide these classic films with live orchestra accompaniment, because so many of these movies have great soundtracks of great composers behind them, and it's really, you know, powerful music and music that's worth hearing in an orchestral setting. So we're happy to be able to provide this for our audience as well.
Okay, I've seen this over the last maybe few years. Give us a little bit of background on this, because it used to be, you know, we would go and hear music being conducted of some of our favorite films, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Superman, Star Wars, all these different things. Has this been like sort of a more recent development in just the past few years, where we're seeing these movies being presented with an orchestra like right in front? I mean, we've seen it sort of, you know, spotty in the past, but it seems like there's so many more in the past few years.
Right. I would say yes and no. And I think you hit it exactly on the head that it's... I think the earliest of these came around sort of maybe 10 years ago. I think one of the first ones we did was actually Pirates of the Caribbean, which was, within the last 10 years, certainly. And that was one of the first forays. Disney was actually in charge of that. And throughout this decade, as it became more and more popular to do this, as people realized that it's not just something that you want to hear on the stage, that it is so much more impactful when you actually see it on screen as well. More and more companies have taken this on board, and more titles have come out. So we're really, now I think we're sort of really in the heyday.
What were some of the ones that you've done over the past few years with the Cleveland Orchestra?
Oh my, we have a series that we call, now it's called the film series. Back then it used to be called Celebrity, and we do, you know, 2 to 3 of these every year, or at least we try to, and we started with some of the classics. We did Casablanca, we did Psycho, we did Vertigo, Fantasia, Home Alone, Modern Times. Just this year, this past season, we did Hunchback of Notre Dame and Home Alone again, Back to the Future. So it's those kinds of more classic titles. And what we always strive to do is provide as much variety in the 2 to 3 or 3 to 4 movies that we do every year. So we'll try and have something that's a black and white silent film from the 20s or 30s. We'll try and have a talking black and white film, a more Technicolor kind of thing, and something from the last 30 years or so.
You're hitting our favorites, and certainly the greatest adventure of all time, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right.
How early did the planning phase for this begin? Because you've got to go real early with this, don't you?
We do, and so I took this on right when I got here. So this was planned right around January, and we were batting around different ideas for exactly what the movie would be. But we thought, since it will be the 35th anniversary of the release of the film, is in 2016. So that really kind of pushed us in that direction.
Sort of walk us through what goes through the planning phase on your end and your team. So you decide, okay, we're going to go with Raiders of the Lost Ark, then what?
Well, the wonderful thing is that because these kinds of projects have become so popular throughout the years, the companies that put them together have become so good at it. So whereas maybe early on, 10 years ago, it was really a collective process, and we had to provide some of the technical elements, and whatever the studio might be would have to provide some technical elements, and things didn't always gel, and it was more of a frankly headache. Now people are so good at it because we do it all the time. So when we say we'd like to present Raiders of the Lost Ark, we call a contact at a management company that has everything in row already, and essentially what happens is we get a package from this management firm that deals directly with the studio, that deals directly with all the technical vendors, and someone comes out who is an expert in this equipment, who knows exactly how it works, who knows exactly how to line everything up, and it goes. It's very smooth.
And then what goes into the choice of conductor? Because as you're going from venue to venue, obviously you're getting different conductors in different cities, different orchestras. So how do you get the people in place?
Sure, and that's an interesting question, because from a technical aspect, from the point of view of a conductor, it is a kind of a daunting challenge, right, to line up what you're doing on stage with what you're seeing on the big screen. So a lot of these companies that package these kinds of shows will provide a conductor, or will at least offer from a list of conductors that they've worked with before, people who know the score very well, people who have done the show before, things like that. We at the Cleveland Orchestra are very fortunate to have Brett Mitchell on board, who has done a large number of our films, and is sort of, when you talk to him, I'm sure he will bring up, he's really a kind of a film music buff, and really loves this kind of material. And so he really knows what he's doing with this kind of stuff. It's really unnecessary for us to venture anywhere else when we have a talent like that on board.
You had your own Indiana Jones on board, right?
Exactly.
He's the Indiana Jones of the Cleveland Orchestra here. Talking about Raiders of the Lost Ark, are you a fan of the Indiana Jones series? Had you seen the film? How many times had you seen the film coming into it?
I'm confident that I've seen all the films. I'm confident that
that's a very safe answer.
Right, exactly. I'm here for safe answers.
Yes,
I love the older films. I'm a little on the fence about the newer ones, but I've seen them all. I wouldn't say that I'm the biggest fan in the world, but it's not about what kind of fan I am. I know it's something that's very, very popular among our public, and I'm sure we're going to see that this weekend.
Okay, so you've obviously had a chance to see it with fresh eyes, though, since you've taken on the project, correct?
Right.
Okay, so your thoughts coming. So for someone, for us indie fans, we're all obsessed with it. We pick apart the minutiae. We go through it like it's the Zapruder film or something, you know. But for somebody coming at it maybe with fresh eyes that hasn't seen it for quite a while, how do you feel that the movie holds up after all these years?
Well, I think not only do I think that it holds up, I think the interesting thing is when I rewatched it for this particular project, I rewatched it specifically with an eye for the music, right? Mm-hmm. Because so much of it is so much of what we're trying to do with it is music driven. We really try and pick films not just because of their cinematographic value, but also because of the music that's involved. And I think that's what struck me most of all, that sometimes when you watch these movies with kind of the legend composers of filmdom, you lose track of it because the music is meant to kind of accentuate and blend into the background. And watching it with that in mind, really paying attention to the music, it struck me how vibrant and how exciting and how important it is to this film.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually almost becomes a character. We've talked about this before, too, is that it almost becomes a character in the film itself.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. Have you been able to sit in on the rehearsals leading up to the event?
Well, our first rehearsal is actually this Friday, which will have some of the technical elements involved, and then we have a full dress on Saturday afternoon out at Blossom, where we'll screen the entire movie and do, you know, essentially a mock performance before everybody comes in.
Okay, and then give us a little bit of background on the venue too, because it's a very unique venue that this is taking place in, sort of the summer home for the Cleveland Orchestra, correct?
It is. It's been the summer home for almost 50 years. It was built in 1968. It's in the middle of a national park, so it's absolutely gorgeous. There's a big sort of shed, or we call it the pavilion, that seats about 5,500 people underneath a roof.
Yeah, it's a little bit bigger than a shed, yeah.
A little bit bigger than a shed. And then behind that, there's a giant lawn that seats maybe 14,000, 15,000, depending on how close people want to get to each other. So it's a lot of capacity. It's been our home for, like I said, almost 50 years. We do a series of from July 4th weekend through Labor Day weekend. We have a constant presence there. I think what's most interesting about it is how excellent it is acoustically, because you go to these venues that are outdoors and obviously you have a lot of elements to deal with. But it was designed in such a way that we really never have to amplify anything underneath this roof, which is a phenomenal asset to have. And obviously we have speakers on the outside so that people on the lawn can hear just as clearly as people inside. But it's really a marvel.
Indiana Jones, Under the Stars, perfect weather, I think, expected. Live orchestra.
Knock on wood.
I mean, what more could somebody want? This is going to be
fireworks
amazing.
Afterwards.
And fireworks. Oh, my goodness. This is, you know, man. What more? Is Harrison Ford going to pop in? That'd be the only way I think you could top it, is if he should.
As an encore. I'm not going to promise anything.
No, but he's certainly invited, right?
Of course. He's always open always invitation. If he's listening.
Spielberg, Williams, Ford, Lucas, they're all invited, I'm sure. What can you tell us? Give us a preview of what's coming up. Look, you know, also for Comic Book Central, it's like, man, I saw Superman on the schedule. Now, I know it's not the movie. You're not going to be showing the Christopher Reeve movie, but there is a Superman event coming up. What can you tell us about that?
There is, and it's very interesting. It's sort of the brainchild of Brett Mitchell, so please do ask him about it. But
we'll be talking about it. Yeah.
He, being a huge Superman fan, put this together, and it's all music from either inspired by the Superman comic books or from the Superman movies themselves. And primarily it's taken from John Williams, who did a lot of the music for the Superman franchise, and from a man by the name of Michael Dougherty, who's a contemporary composer who wrote this piece of music called the Metropolis Symphony. And it's a multi-movement work, and each movement is devoted to sort of an aspect of the comic book series. And so it's a program that Brett put together specifically for this. It's all Superman-based. There's going to be some visuals involved, and it should be a great time.
Wow, this is going to be amazing. So it just sort of combines these different elements, these different orchestral elements of the Superman mythos all in one evening. That's going to be kind of amazing. What other events are you working on? What's coming up, and then what are you working on for next season?
So the movies we have next season are Nosferatu, which is a classic sort of thriller, movie from the late 20s, I believe. And it will feature an improvisational score by an organist who's been doing this with us for a number of years, which should be phenomenal. And then we're doing It's a Wonderful Life, which is always a classic around the holidays. Right around Valentine's Day, or actually on Valentine's Day, we're going to be showing Breakfast at Tiffany's. And then we're ending the season with West Side Story, complete with full orchestral accompaniment.
Oh my goodness. Boy, you got your hands full on this one. Now for the next season, so I guess it would be the 2016 or 2017, 2018 season. Mm-hmm. Are you starting to get ideas now for some things? Can you tease anything, or is that just all sort of in the, you know, in everyone's collective brains right now?
It's in everyone's collective brains.
Okay.
I don't want to give anything away, but I'm sure it'll, you know, as usual, we'll try to provide as exciting a season as we do this year and next year. So stay tuned.
Looking forward to that. Where can folks find out more about what's going on with the Cleveland Orchestra? What's the best place for them to go?
Best place to go is clevelandorchestra.com, which will have all of our information for this upcoming 16-17 season. Start there.
And links to all the social media pages are on there, I'm assuming?
Absolutely.
Sounds good, man. This is going to be a blast. I'm looking forward to Raiders of the Lost Ark. I'm looking forward to Superman. I'm looking forward to so many different things. Ilya Gedalovich, man, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
Well, when Indiana Jones swings from a bullwhip on screen, the man joining me now will be swinging a baton, making sure the music guides Indy to yet another great escape. He is the associate conductor of the Cleveland Orchestra, Brett Mitchell. Brett, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure to be here.
Oh, man. Can't wait to see and hear this event. Can't wait to talk about all these different things. I want to go back a little bit, though, with you, get a little bit of background with you. When and how did you first get interested in classical music? And I am hoping that the answer is the same as it is for most of us through Bugs Bunny cartoons.
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, I certainly had my share of Killed a Wabbit and all that. But, you know, honestly, I was born in 1979. And so the first orchestral music I ever heard was coming out of my television in films like Star Wars and Superman and E.T. and, of course, Indiana Jones. And it wasn't until, you know, probably my teenage years where I realized, oh, my God, all that music is by the same guy. It's all by John Williams. Man. And so my entree into orchestral music, you know, a lot of my colleagues, you know, they've been playing Mozart since they were 3 years old and Beethoven since they were five and whatever. It wasn't that way for me. For me, my entree to classical music was really John Williams. So when I get to do a project like what I'm doing this weekend with the Cleveland Orchestra, doing Raiders of the Lost Ark live in front of, you know, 10 or 15,000 people both nights, I mean, what more could an early 80s kid ask for?
I was going to ask if Williams was an influence. It's nice to hear that he was the influence.
He really was, yeah. You know, and I'll tell you this too, that before I was going to become a conductor, my undergraduate degree is actually in composition, because what I thought I wanted to do was to score films. And in fact, I did a little bit of that when I was an undergrad. I did a little bit of, you know, student film work here and there, and I did a local TV show writing the theme song and underscore for that. But, you know, the more I spent time with Mr. Williams' music, I was like, oh, I'm never going to get there, am I? I may as well just do his stuff. And so he really is the reason that I do what I do. It's such a treat.
It's not even that the bar set high with him. It's just the bar set impossibly high for him. Yeah, I think it's just so many. Well, you see so many influences, too, of his music throughout film composition. I think as you go through, I mean, he just sort of defined that era of film composition.
He really did, and it was, you know, as I'm sure your listeners know, there was quite a lull in the 60s and 70s in particular of traditional orchestral Hollywood film scores. You know, it was much more much trendier at the time to have kind of a score that was comprised of pop songs and maybe a light little number here and there. But it really was John Williams that brought back, you know, in the mid 70s with Jaws, and then in particular Star Wars, brought back this idea of kind of an epic Hollywood score along the lines of Eric Korngold and Franz Waxman, and in particular Max Steiner, who was a big influence on the Raiders score.
Do you have a favorite of Williams' scores? I mean, I know I do, but do you have a favorite? You know, like I can pick out one singly that I know, but yeah. I'm just curious if you have one.
It's so hard for me because they're all so meaningful to me. I think, though, that if you made me pick one, if I had one that I had to listen to for the rest of my life, I think it would be Empire Strikes Back, because the film for me is my favorite of the seven Star Wars films. And I just feel like that score, he's really in 1980 at the height of his powers. I think a lot of people would say, you know, mid-70s for, you know, 10 or 15 years. And certainly when he was doing Empire, you take the quality of the film and the quality of what Mr. Williams was able to bring to it. And I don't know that it gets much better, but, you know, yeah. I got 10 or 15 more that I could pick. What's yours, just out of curiosity?
That's a great choice, by the way, because I've listened to Empire on a loop. I remember when I first got it, I just listened to it nonstop. So of the Star Wars, that's my favorite. My favorite all-time Williams score is Superman, though. I just... I'm a comic book guy, so, well, you know, it's my two favorite characters, Indiana Jones, Superman. So it's like... Yeah. But, I mean, Superman, it's so epic, and it's so different because you go from the Krypton stuff to the Smallville,
Norman Rockwell,
you know, to this big booming, you know, and I could see the scenes as the music plays. I almost feel like I'm watching the movie. But
absolutely. Yeah. No, I totally agree. I think it's an amazing score. And, again, you know, you look at all of this stuff happening within a 5-year period or so. Superman was 78, Empire, which we were just talking about, is 80, and Raiders of the Lost Ark is 81. And it's amazing that this guy was able to come up with all of this extraordinary material in such a short time.
Unbelievable. And still doing it today with Star Wars. Yeah. And hopefully Indiana Jones again. That'd be nice.
Indeed. Indy 5, right?
I know. Absolutely. Oh, boy. Don't even get us started on that, because our brains can't contain it until, 2019. So, absolutely. Well, speaking of Indiana Jones, you've been doing some Indiana Jones like globe hopping yourself recently, right? Did you go over to Asia?
Yeah, I was in Asia about a year ago. So in addition to being the associate conductor of the Cleveland Orchestra, I'm music director of the Cleveland Orchestra Youth Orchestra. And we do an international tour every few years. With my predecessor back in 2012, they did a tour of Europe. And because we had some overlap three seasons later, I said, you know, I really like to give the young musicians a different experience. And so it doesn't get much more different from Europe than China. So we went to China for a couple of weeks and played 4 concerts over there, which was great. And in fact, I just got back about a week ago from the Cleveland Orchestra's 2016 European tour. So we were over there for a couple of weeks as well. So one of the really nice things about my job is that I do get to do a little bit of that, as you referred to it, Indiana Jones globe hopping as well. I need it scored, and I need that kind of red line, you know, that goes and follows me. But
I was going to ask if there's one great behind the plane with you as you travel.
Yeah,
along that red line.
That's exactly right. It moves a little slower in real life than it does in film.
Yeah, yeah. Time compressed for film, but and of course you're traveling.
A 9-hour flight really is a 9-hour flight. Unfortunately, no way around that.
And of course, traveling the country, man, you're all over the place, guest conducting. And we'll talk about how fans can find out more about where you're going to be, but. I mentioned talking about my two favorites today, Indiana Jones and Superman. Let's chat about Indy first. What did you think when you were first approached about Raiders of the Lost Ark in concert? You kind of gave us a little fanboy perspective there, but just from a nuts and bolts, like, how am I going to pull this off? What did you think about that?
Well, I'll tell you the tricky thing about doing something like Raiders, which is, you know, it's a very well-known score, which is great because that gets you, you know, I'll get to the first rehearsal with the orchestra on Friday morning and there'll be some familiarity with the theme. Certainly everybody will know Indy's theme. Some of the orchestra will know Marion's theme, the love theme, because that appears in the concert version of the Raiders March. One leitmotif they won't know, one theme that they won't know, is the theme of the Ark of the Covenant, which is the third big theme in this picture. So there's a little bit of needing to get the orchestra familiar with the themes, but the really tricky thing about doing a score like Raiders is that, look, it's an action pick, and when it's an action, you know, movie like this, it's so challenging with the amount of what we call Mickey Mousing that John Williams does, where whatever you see on the screen tends to be reflected in the music. So, for example, when Marion, you know, gets thrown down into the pit with Indy, there's this, as she's falling, this, you know, this musical gesture that kind of starts up high and then ends down low. And with some films, you know, the synchronization of music to picture, it isn't the end of the world. If you're, you know, a second early here or a second late there, it's not the biggest issue. But when you have something like Indy, which has so much of that Mickey Mousing, you really do have to make sure that you're exactly in sync with the picture at any given time. And frankly, this is about 90 minutes of music, and it's 90 minutes of music that the orchestra has never played. And so basically you're asking them to learn an entire Mahler symphony, or like an act of a Wagner opera, over the space of about 36 hours, and wow, to be able to put it together in such a way that they're flexible enough that I can kind of move the tempo around if I see, oh boy, we're a little bit behind here, got to move ahead. Oh boy, we're a little ahead here, got to pull back. But the great news is that we have one of the most virtuosic ensembles on the planet in the Cleveland Orchestra. So they make a very difficult job somewhat easier.
And for us fans, we're watching, we're listening. I mean, it's great if we don't know any of that, because it just has to be seamless. But my goodness, the work that goes into this and the preps that go into this just have to be astounding.
Yeah, it really is. It takes so much time, because in addition to, look, you're not only learning 90 minutes of music, which is no mean feat. I think the score is about 370 pages or something like that.
Whoa.
So it's a ton of music. But not only are you learning all of that music, you're having to go back and look at a picture that, yeah, okay, so I've known the film like since before I had memories, of course. But there's a big difference between watching a film for enjoyment and watching a film knowing that I see this gesture musically has to line up with when Indy, you know, moves the whip or whatever it is. So it's kind of a double jeopardy, as it were. You got to learn the music and you've got to learn the film and how those two things go together.
Yeah, I think the only break you get really is the gunfight in Nepal.
Yeah, right, scene. Which is like, thank God. I mean, that's like,
do you take a little breather there, grab some water?
Yeah, I think I may grab a sip of whatever Marion was drinking.
Whiskey.
I think that may be it.
He's got the whiskey right. Yeah, when he grabs a whiskey bottle, yeah, you're sure.
That's right, absolutely.
It seems appropriate. It seems completely appropriate. Now, you've conducted in front of films before.
I have, yeah. I've done a good number of films. I've done my first John Williams film was a couple years ago. I did Home Alone, which is such a treat, and we did it around the holidays, which was really nice. I've done, gosh, what else have I done? I've done a couple of Hitchcock films. I've done Psycho, and I've done Vertigo with, nice, you know, those great Bernard Herrmann scores.
Yeah.
So I've done my share of films, and I look, for somebody that got into conducting orchestras through the world originally of film music, it's nothing but a pleasure for me to be able to really marry the two great loves of my life, conducting orchestras and this wonderful music of John Williams that I've known since before I could articulate that I loved the music.
Was there anything with the Rader score that surprised you? Because you mentioned this is such a part of your DNA, but now you're looking at it and listening to it differently. Was there anything that surprised you and went, whoa, I didn't know that was in there?
Well, you know what's interesting? The theme for the Ark of the Covenant, which is those kind of three minor chords that I don't have a piano with me, but the three minor chords, I'm sure some of our listeners will know what I'm talking about. It's such a great theme, but the thing that strikes me about it as I was going through it, I don't know how many times Williams uses the Ark theme, but every single time it comes back, it's orchestrated just slightly differently. This time it's flutes and muted trumpets. This time it's oboes and clarinets. This time it's muted trombones and bassoons. And so he's subtly shifting the colors of this same motif. Everybody will always recognize it as the Ark of the Covenant theme, but every time he presents it just slightly differently for, one, the sake of variety, but two, to reflect as precisely as possible the emotions of the characters on screen. And I just, you know, for having known this music all my life, to be able to finally get the score for it and see, oh my God, that's how he did that. That's how he got that awesome color. I'll tell you one other thing. Towards the beginning, you know, in the jungle sequence in Peru, there's some really interesting sounds that are going on in the orchestra. And having conducted as much orchestral music as I have, especially, you know, 20th and 21st century orchestral music, I'm familiar with you know, all of the traditional, what we would call extended techniques. So, you know, like there's the gong that we call it. It's actually more properly referred to as a tam-tam. But, you know, you can strike the gong fine. You can actually take a little triangle beater and swipe the gong. You can use a super ball and rub it against that. So I know all those tricks, but there was one sound in the jungle sequence at the beginning where I was like, what is that sound? And I've always wondered it my whole life. And so when I finally got the score for Raiders, the first thing I did was open it to that page. And I figured out what he was doing. He's taking, you know, timpani, the big kettle drums, the tuned drums that you hear like at the beginning of 2001, A Space Odyssey. He takes the timpani sticks, and instead of playing with the felt, he turns them around, so you're just playing with the wood, but he doesn't play on the head of the drums. He plays on the actual metal body of the drums with the wood, and it's just this creepy, weird, kind of nondescript sound. And I remember sitting there at our kitchen counter with the score open and just laughing hysterically, like, how do you come up with that? So those kinds of really, really behind the scenes stuff to really get inside of John Williams' head and see what he was trying to accomplish and how he did it. That for me has been the biggest treat of this whole process.
Do you recall a specific scene that we can look for? I mean, the specific image that is on screen when that happens that we can kind of look for?
You know, I don't remember when that happens. I think it's actually when the music quiets down as they're heading into the cave. You know, they start in the jungle, but then they go into the cave.
Okay.
And there's all these, it's like right before the spiders come out.
Okay.
And land on them. But yeah, it really, really nice. cool sound effect.
That's something to look forward to then. Do you have a favorite moment in Raiders of the Lost Ark, or do you have even a favorite musical moment in Raiders?
You know, one of the great things about what John Williams does, and he's talked about this many times, is he says, you know, I'm a big fan of creating these themes, but then only introducing them kind of cell by cell, like these five notes here, these four notes there. And it goes that way for the first, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 reels of the picture, so that, you know, the first time you hear Indy's theme, bum ba dum bum, bum ba dum, you hear a little bit of it as the plane is taking off, as they're escaping from Peru, but you only get just a little bit here and a little bit there, and he introduces the theme gradually for the first hour and 15 minutes of the picture, so that by the time you do finally get a full statement of the indie theme, there's a couple that happen during the desert chase toward the end of the film, but really when Indy jumps on top of the Nazi sub. And that's the first time you get a full-on march statement of the Indiana Jones theme. Boy, it is such an enormous payoff. It's like if you can imagine a comedian telling a joke and the setup lasts for like an hour and 15 minutes, and then finally you get the punchline. Boy, does that punchline feel great. And that's the genius of John Williams. So when Indy hops up on that sub, that for me is about as fun as it gets.
Yeah, you mentioned the two biggest moments, I think, and just that's that almost like stand on your feet kind of moment too. It's just that is an Indiana Jones moment right there. Talking about looking forward to the future, you mentioned Indy 5 coming up, I think 2019. So
yeah,
where do you think the series should go musically? What kind of music would you like Williams to tackle for the next one? Because you think about Raiders, there's kind of like the classic movie serials, mm-hmm. Temple of Doom. You kind of have the Far East. Maybe, you know, the familial aspect, father and son in Last Crusade, Russian motif, you know, Crystal Skull.
Yeah.
Where would you like to see musically, where would you like to see him head for the fifth one?
Well, I think it really entirely depends on the fifth film itself, right? And this is something that Williams says all the time. You know, he says, I don't even read scripts. He says, I don't like to read scripts. He says, I don't like to know what's coming. I like to watch the rough cut of the film for the first time, and whatever my visceral reactions are to that, that's what I go off of. So of course, I mean, of course you've got to have Indy's theme in some way or another. You know, who knows if there are returning characters. Always wonderful to revisit old themes, much like he did in Force Awakens, right, where you have Han and Leia and they're both older, and so everything's in a slightly lower key. Instead of an oboe playing Leia's theme, you've got an alto flute now that she's older. So it really just depends on where they take the film, because I've seen too many John Williams films to try to pigeonhole him into this is what I'd love for him to go revisit the old Max Steiner language that he used to use. I'm a big Billy Joel fan, and I remember right before Billy retired from making original records after River of Dreams, he gave a press conference and he said, you know, people say to me, why don't you just make another record like Innocent Man? And he says, well, then why don't I just go back to being that age? Because that's not what this is about. This is about growth, and it's about the growth of Mr. Williams as an artist. It's about the growth of Steven Spielberg. It's about the growth of Harrison Ford. So wherever those three want to take us next, I'm totally on board and 100% game. I couldn't be more excited.
My other favorite character, Superman, October 30th, you're going to be at Severance Hall. So we've got the Blossom Music Center?
Blossom Music Center, yeah.
Is the summer home, and then Severance Hall is going to be in the fall. That's typically where you're conducting. Superman right. at the Symphony.
Yeah.
Okay, not the movie, but
right.
a Superman experience. What's the story behind Superman at the Symphony?
So I came up with this idea because, much like you, my favorite comic book character is Superman. Always has been. I was absolutely in love with Christopher Reeve and Margot Kidder when I was a little boy. Thought the movies were just absolutely brilliant. And I think that one of the things that makes them brilliant, no surprise, is John Williams' score. So when I was trying to think of what we could do for our young audiences at the Cleveland Orchestra this coming season, many people don't remember that Superman was actually created right here in Cleveland. Siegel and Shuster came up with the character when they were in high school, and so it's a really big part of the Cleveland story. And so we're always looking for local things that can appeal to kind of a broader market. And between, you know, the new Superman film that just came out, the Cleveland history with it, John Williams's wonderful music, all of these things kind of combined to make it so that doing a performance of all Superman-inspired music was going to be a great way to go. So what we're actually doing is we're going to do three pieces from John Williams' score for the 1978 Superman. We do The March, of course. We'll do the love theme, and we'll do The March of the Villains. But also on that program, there's a great contemporary American composer named Michael Dougherty. And Michael, in the late 80s and early 90s, wrote kind of one movement after another based on the various characters from the Superman universe. And it started just as one movement. I think I can't remember which came first, but there's one called O Lois. There's one called Lex. There's one called Krypton. There's one called the Red Cape Tango, which is about Superman and Doomsday fighting to the death. And there's another movement as well. But what Michael eventually did was he said, you know what, if I'm going to write all these little orchestral pieces all sharing the same Superman theme, then maybe I should combine them which is exactly what he did, into what he called his Metropolis Symphony, which is this five-movement symphony inspired by all these Superman characters. So what we're going to do on October 30th is we're going to take some of John Williams's music, and we're going to take some of Michael Dougherty's music, and put those together and see how two different composers painted the idea of Superman using the orchestra. So I think it's going to be an absolute ton of fun.
And this, what can fans expect? We're going to be seeing some Superman imagery going along with this.
Yeah, there's definitely some Superman imagery. We're still, you know, we've got a couple of months before that gets put together. And as you can imagine, with Raiders on the horizon, we haven't tended to Superman in great detail. But okay. We know exactly what we're playing, and we're going to have lots of great visuals and maybe a guest or two with us on stage as well. I'm just saying, as I said, I was born in 79. I got T-shirts. That's all I'll say. just because I'm wearing a suit at the show doesn't mean the suit stays on the entire time. That's all I'll say.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then, so can you, so we might be seeing some super guests?
It's possible.
Okay.
There's
a nice tease.
Possible.
That's so, a nice
tease. Yeah, you like that?
I do like that a lot. Is there any chance that maybe somewhere down the road we might see Superman the movie in concert?
You know what's interesting? I actually asked about that a couple of years ago because I love the movie so much. And like you, I think the score is just one of his very best, you know. And you alluded to kind of the three different languages, the stuff on Krypton at the beginning, and then that beautiful Copeland-esque Andrew Wyeth type, music from Smallville, and then all the superhero stuff. So I asked the guys that do these projects, I said, you know, has there been any thought to doing Superman? And they said to me, and I was so disappointed, they said, you know, the special effects today are just so much better than they were back then, and we're not entirely sure that people would come to see the film. And
oh,
I was like, you're out of your minds.
Yeah.
Of course people are going to come see the film. So
the special effects at the end of Raiders are so stunning, you know.
Yeah,
they're so state of the art.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, right, exactly, with the melting faces and
yeah,
all that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, with the jello, but, with the, yeah, the jello melting.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, fingers crossed that it'll happen. I mean, okay. Obviously the first time the Star Wars films happen with orchestra, my life can end anytime after that. That's fine. That's what I've been waiting 37 years for. So
well, you can tell the folks in charge of it that they showed Superman the movie last year at the Ohio Theater, the summer movie series was Superman, and Raiders was this year. Both packed audiences.
Yeah.
The interest is definitely still there. So hopefully that's in your future as well. That'd be very cool.
I'll do a little arm twisting.
Do that. Yeah. Well, you just crack that whip.
That's right. That's right. Exactly right.
How can we find out more about you and where you're going to be conducting? Website?
Yeah. Best place to go is Brett with two T's, MitchellConductor.com. BrettMitchellConductor.com.
Excellent. All the social media links are going to be on there as well. And
ClevelandOrchestra.com
as well for ticket information about these events. Man, this is going to be fun. There's so much on tap. Brett, you've got your hands full. I'm going to let you get back to what
Excellent.
You're doing.
You've
got
you some rehearsals. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us on the show today.
It's been a pleasure.
I am so looking forward to these events. It's going to be a blast. As I mentioned, if you are near Cleveland this weekend, September 3rd and 4th, it's actually right outside of Cleveland, Cuyahoga Falls. It is Raiders of the Lost Ark in concert at the Blossom Music Center. The film, the orchestra, fireworks, Indiana Jones, snakes, whips, bad guys. You got it all. What more could you want? How about the Man of Steel? There, Superman at the Symphony, even more. Sunday, October 30th, ClevelandOrchestra.com. That's the website. You can find out everything you need to know about those events there. Be sure to tell them Stuberman and Comic Book Central sent you. My thanks to Kathy Parr at the Cleveland Orchestra for setting those interviews up this week. And of course, Brett Mitchell and Ilya Gadalovich for stopping by today. So much fun catching up with those gents. These events are going to be crazy cool. I'm going to put the link to the Cleveland Orchestra website. That's going to be in the show notes for this bonus episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net. Be sure to head there because that is where I'm going to be kicking off my treasury-sized, epic, multi-part adventure at Terrificon. That comic book convention took place in Connecticut. I recorded hours worth of content for all of you listeners out there. In fact, if you're talking bonus episodes, you are talking Comic Book Central and Terrificon. This Saturday, you're going to hear my Q&A with Gotham's Cameron B. Condova, visits with Peter David, Rene Aubergenois, Sean Gunn, Comic Book Men's Ming Chen, surprises galore. It is going to be a huge episode. Then, over the next week, more bonus episodes of Comic Book Central featuring my Q&As with super animator Rick Hoberg, celebrating 25 years of Ren and Stimpy with co-creator Bob Camp, Flash Gordon's Sam Jones, and then back a week from Saturday to close it out with my Q&A with the original Scarlet Speedster and now Golden Age Flash Jay Garrick, actor John Wesley Shipp. All of that's coming your way. You do not want to miss a moment of the fun. And longtime listeners, you know you will not miss a moment of the fun when you subscribe to the show on iTunes or Stitcher. Many of you are out there doing that. Thank you so much. You can download or stream the show at the website each week, comicbookcentral.net. Be sure to like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. Follow Comic Book Central on Twitter at comicbookctrl. I post all of the episodes on social media when they go online. Share the lair, folks. Tons of Terrificon coming your way. You want to get that out to all your friends and family, all your comic book loving peeps out there. It all starts this Saturday. Until then, watch out for those snakes and rolling boulders. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content in this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 imported license. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
Ladies and gentlemen, the recipient of the 28th AFI Life Achievement Award, Harrison Ford.
Damn music follows me everywhere. It's played every time I walk on a stage, every time I walk off a stage. It's worse than that. It was playing in the operating room when I went in for my colonoscopy.